to time certain, item 372.
Approve revised financial assistance guidelines from the Portland Housing Bureau. Yeah.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When the Portland Housing Bureau was established in, I believe it was 2009, council approved the adoption of loan products then being used at the Portland Development Commission. That approval was conditioned on the Housing Bureau bringing back revised financial assistance guidelines after a loan portfolio analysis and strategic planning efforts. Under the direction of then Housing Commissioner Nick Fish, this process was begun. Commissioner Fish wisely brought in an outside expert in banking and lending to assist the Housing Bureau with its analysis. Working alongside with the in-house talent at the Housing Bureau, the team conducted an extensive review, which included interviewing other public lenders, private financial institutions, and for-profit and nonprofit developers and owners of affordable housing. Portland Housing Bureau's investments take into account the population being served and align the loan product with the project's ability to repay while servicing those most in need. The recently completed March 2014 audit by the city auditor reinforced some of the recommendations you see here today. The final pieces of these guidelines were crafted in response to this March 2014 audit, which contained a recommendation to determine the need for a grant type of a product. The Housing Bureau has been using a product which is in many ways a grant. It's called an equity gap contribution. I concurred with the audit recommendations and directed the creation of a grant type product that will not change and also not change the city's current legal rights to enforce the agreement to provide at least 60 years of affordable housing to the public or enable us to seek repayment should that commitment not be met. These guidelines also specify when the equity gap contribution or grant will be used, clearly stating that it will be used only as a last resort when all other forms of financing from outside sources and from the Housing Bureau are exhausted and when it is truly necessary to bring an extraordinary affordable housing development to fruition. I also felt strongly that the product should require a higher level of approval authority and directed the Bureau to lower the dollar amount of its and my authority to issue this product. So Council will now approve an equity gap contribution when it exceeds $1 million instead of the current $3 million threshold for Council approval. The final change contained in these loan product guidelines at first blush would seem to raise eyebrows. The deletion of the requirement that cost per unit should compare favorably with Housing Bureau published averages. However, we're doing this because it's too late in the process to require a development cost threshold when we're actually at the point of negotiating loan documents, as a project will already have been selected for funding when the loan documents are drafted. So instead, we will be requiring more from our developers earlier in the process. In our next notice of funds availability, which we'll be issuing very shortly, which is the mechanism by which we seek to fund projects, the Housing Bureau will, for the first time, set maximum cost thresholds based on unit size. There has been much public concern about the cost per unit for affordable housing development in Portland. It's a topic that I hear at almost every public forum I attend, and we will be tackling this issue head-on in the next round of funding by setting maximum cost unit cost thresholds. So I'd now like to turn it over to Tracy Manning, the Bureau Director, and Javier Mena, the Assistant Director, to answer any of your questions. I know it's dense stuff, but it's important stuff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we don't have a presentation. We're just
Commissioner Salzman covered it
here.
Well, so questions, discussion?
I just have one question, please. And that is, who actually gets the money that we provide? Is it the banks or is it the developer?
The owner.
So they own the developer.
The landowner. Yeah, sometimes the developer and the owner are separate, but ultimately it's a loan just like a mortgage or a grant to a homeowner.
It's
in this
directly
case,
from us to that person, to that entity, rather than to through a bank.
Correct.
Thank you.
I guess I'll jump in. Tracy, a year or so ago, a year and a half ago, we came to council with a imaginatively titled presentation on portfolio optimization project. and it was a real page turner. But it took us years to get our hands around this. So, how much of the work that's before us now is part of the evolutionary process that you began under POP?
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly right. It's been really an evolution, and Commissioner Saltzman sort of started with the founding of PHB and the original adoption of the PDC loan products is really taking a look at, as was referenced, what was in the loan portfolio and how did we do our best work to stabilize and make sure that public investment in the affordable housing portfolio was going to be sustainable over the 60 years. And so that's been the work over time to see, did the loan products that we were using really maximize that sustainability over the long haul for the public infrastructure? And so the first thing we brought to council was exactly that. The portfolio optimization said we've got some cases where our products are not sufficient. And so that's what we brought last year. That's exactly, and this is never the end, but the end of this part of the process is requesting these adjustments.
You see, my second question is, my recollection is that in the audit, it looked at about $300 and something million of loans and grants. And so that's about a quarter of that was issued by the New Portland Housing Bureau and about three quarters predated and was administered by PDC. And an issue that was highlighted had to do with when is a loan a disguised grant. And what I learned through the POP process is that in some instances, our nonprofit developer partners need to show debt in order to get low-income tax credits, even though effectively we treat it as a grant. Could you walk us through that?
Well, leverage is obviously really important. We fund almost none of the affordable housing that we fund by ourselves. It's all leveraged with other sources, and one of the biggest sources for the more deeply affordable projects in particular is a low-income housing tax credit that comes from the federal government issued by the state of Oregon. It provides equity in a project using the private finance market. So effectively, in order for that structure to be beneficial enough to induce the private market to participate, one of the benefits that they get is depreciation on the loan. And so if it's a grant, you're not going to get any depreciation. It's going to be treated as equity. The benefits to the private market are lessened, and they're less likely to participate. So this structure of a cash flow loan, presuming that it actually meets the financial tests it needs to meet, helps us hit the best of both worlds. We leverage private financial activity into providing very low-income housing.
A lot of the projects you funded over the last few years were funded with low-income housing tax credits, and during the recession, the value of those tax credits got hammered. But does this change make it harder for our nonprofit partners to finance deeply affordable housing? Does the shift away from grants to loans make it harder to leverage the low-income tax credits they often need to make these projects pencil out?
No, it doesn't. And I'd like to give some credit and let Javier talk a little bit about what this change does is make things more clear and more equitable for our partners.
Okay. What we did and what we're proposing to change, Javier Mena, Portland Housing Bureau, is that and one of the issues that was brought up by the audit was that there wasn't a clear delineation between our cash flow share note and our equity gap contribution, and the perception of not being used equitably within our development partners. And so by separating...
What does that mean, not be used equitably?
That our underwriters may use different reasons as to choose one versus the other and therefore not provide a clear process as to why one would be choose versus the other. And so by separating the two products and clearly identifying the equity gap contribution as a grant that would only be used if a project truly cannot afford any debt, versus a cash flow share note as a tool that can be used for a tax credit project that shows there is debt. And then it gives us a time that in 15 years, when the equity exits, that we can reassess to see if the project truly is not able to sustain that, or if it's something that, that we can give us the flexibility to do. And so that's what this action does. It does not deter the investment into a tax credit project. Actually provides better direction to our underwriters as to when to choose one product versus the other.
Well, that's helpful. If I could just shift a second, though, because the cost per unit issue is less clear to me. We'll give Mr. Walsh a chance to clear his throat.
Inside or outside?
Joe, do you need some water?
Okay. I'll be all right.
Okay.
I'm good.
So, Tracy, I've seen some recent commentary in the press about how, and some suggestions that have been pitched about how we could lower cost per unit. And I've seen four in particular. One is that we not use prevailing wage on our projects. Two is that we repeal an ordinance that Dan Salzman championed to provide for green building standards in our product. Three is that we repeal our equity guidelines that, among other things, promote opportunity neighborhoods, so no longer invest in high-performing communities, but just where the dirt is the cheapest. And four, that we back off the notion that our housing and services should be married, because one of the cost drivers in a lot of the housing that you fund is that it's housing plus services. And they tend to add the total price and divide by the units, not recognizing that a lot of the building is service intensive. So those are four ways that I've seen in editorials and in news stories suggested there where we with our public investment could lower down, could reduce costs. Are any of those four under current active consideration by the Bureau?
There isn't anything under consideration in isolation. I think what we are proposing to do, and we addressed it in the letter back to the audit, is I think it's prudent for any organization, and particularly one in service of the public, to periodically review the policies that we have put in place over time to make sure they're still relevant in the current environment to get the outcomes that we want to get. So, I think that there could be some interesting points that people have raised. Green building is really important for the health of our community, but also for the health of the people who live in the units. We don't have a lot of definition around what we will and won't pay for, and does that still make sense? So it's not so much is any one thing a problem. I think in my mind it's a question of it makes sense to periodically review the paradigm that we've decided we provide this housing in and make sure that we're spending our affordable housing dollar the best that we can. What I would say would be a mistake would be exactly as you suggest, to review any one thing in isolation.
Well, the other thing I'd just point out that all four of those areas that I've identified are council priorities. They're council policies. Right. So they are, I think the beauty of our system is we periodically take a fresh look at existing policy. But would you agree with me that to the extent the city wanted to change its views on prevailing wage projects, green buildings, equity, things of that nature, that ultimately is a council decision?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So the companion question I have is this idea of cost per unit. And I applaud Commissioner Salzman for looking for ways to deliver affordable housing at a lower cost point. And one of the projects that you funded that I think illustrates the point is the NEA housing in Lentz, where they used prefabricated units. And I think they constructed the complex in 3 or 4 days. It's fabricated in Oregon, which is a great example of leveraging jobs in Oregon. It's shipped, and then it's put together. And it's a beautiful complex, and you were able to drive the unit cost down because they came fully built. And so I applaud that. I guess the question I would have about a maximum cost per unit is, what's the process you're going to go through to determine what should be the maximum cost per unit? And how will we know that whatever number you set on doesn't fundamentally change the ground rules for people that seek funding from us?
Maybe I'll take a stab at that. So we are developing the maximum cost per unit that will be published in the upcoming NOFA, again, based on the unit size. We've looked to the north. Both Washington State and Seattle have adopted some maximum cost per unit thresholds. And we're also, we're also being more precise about what we're going to look at in that unit cost per threshold calculation. So we're trying to make the maximum unit cost per threshold, or maximum unit cost thresholds, truly reflect the living space. So issues around community space for services and things like that will also be considered. But we're going to have a better idea of what the cost is for the actual residential unit we're getting. And then there's, and we also ultimately have the discretion, both the director and myself, to take into account unique circumstances of a particular project and to, in essence, override our maximum cost guidelines if we feel there are compelling reasons that a project should be funded.
So Tracy, what's the public process you're going to go through to determine the maximum price and to give our public and private partners a chance to weigh in on that?
I would say it's going to be this upcoming notice of funds availability, because we have some maximum cost per unit thresholds in that document, and that'll start the conversation.
Whether you're going to take comment from all the providers, even the ones that weren't necessarily responding to that NOFA?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we'll take comments from anybody, but we want to instill this principle at the outset of this $17.5 million in money that we're going to be releasing.
So. Let me just jump in on that. Has the PHAC, has the Portland Housing Advisory Commission weighed in on this question of an appropriate maximum price?
They haven't. It's not the kind of thing they would typically review. We tend to go straight to our providers and the folks who build the housing and own the housing.
What's the fee? So what's the maximum price that you're currently considering?
I do not have that in front of me. It's per unit, and it's based on the history of the last 12 projects, new construction projects that we've funded, and then inflated to take into account increases in construction cost over time.
Has that figure been shared with the development community, and have you gotten some feedback on it yet?
No, not yet.
For me?
Not yet. No.
Well, I appreciate this discussion, Dan. I think I share some of Commissioner Fish's concerns here. I love the direction you're taking here. I think I'm totally in accord with where you're going. But from my own experience here recently, I'm finding it's helpful to talk, for example, with people who are currently doing projects with PDC and people who are currently not doing projects with PDC because they find one of our requirements cumbersome and impracticable. So I think it would be good if you use this NOFA to cast a pretty wide net and say, whether you're going to respond to this notice of funds availability and propose on one of these projects, we'd like to hear from you as a provider, for-profit, nonprofit, whoever,
right?
Because I learned a few things in that kind of conversation, plan to learn a few more and more of those, with, in some cases, providers or private developers who've kind of written us off. And obviously, I think you want to hear from those folks. I know you do. So nothing wrong with using
that.
Yeah,
so, I mean, we can cast a broad net when we release the NOFA and invite comments from people who may not even be considering applying, but also get their feedback on these maximum.
When are you planning to release the NOFA?
This week.
So you can't tell us at council today what the maximum price is.
I don't have it in front of me.
We have it. It's
possibly
just,
fish it out of my email.
But they're there.
So you're going to publish that.
Correct. Right. And just to add, I think as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, is that we were taking this as the initial process to really have that broad discussion to say. An internal and external discussion, because we really care about this issue and what makes sense in terms of what's the right number. And it makes sense for us to be able to use this NOFA as kind of the starting tool to be able to have that discussion and be a broad-based discussion.
But, Javier, let me just push back on that for a second. We we have lots of, the Bureau has done a wonderful job developing the NOFA process. In fact, it was one of the great breaks from the PDC past in that we created a process designed to create a level playing field. We ended the practice of whichever developer got in the front door first got the best deal. And we created a set of neutral criteria that everyone that set the ground rules for everybody. And we did it around equity, and we did it around lots of other values, and then we graded people accordingly. So every time you tweak that, you either intentionally or unintentionally shift the playing field in terms of who can compete and who gets funded. So it's one thing to say that there's a body of information we'll have at the back end, but I think while the council maybe shouldn't get in the weeds too much on this, I also want to make sure we're not changing city policy by changing some of the decision points and, in effect, changing who's really in the queue and who's likely to get funded. The debrief is good, but the debrief happens after you may have made decisions based on a new framework, and I think the council has a role to play in understanding the framework.
Yeah, it seems to me that the question of the maximum cost per unit is a policy question that the council should weigh in and have a public hearing on, because that I'm not the housing commissioner, never have been, probably never will be. I get the emails berating me as a member of the council for funding things that people believe are excessively expensive. So I'd like to have that discussion at council.
Well, I feel that there's got to be some discretion to, you know, the housing commissioner and the housing bureau to try to move forward and achieve the policies of providing affordable housing, but doing it in a way that looks, you know, pays due heed to what people are raising concerns about, and that is the maximum cost. I don't feel having a council hearing on these maximum cost thresholds is going to be all that productive.
You know, well,
I think it's better to, you know, to get it out there, get the wheels rolling, and get the feedback as we're doing it, and, you know, change.
How would somebody like Michael Withy, for example, be able to comment on the proposed maximum cost threshold, and how would he know about it?
When we issue the notice of funds availability document.
So he's not a developer, so he wouldn't get that?
Well, we just talked about casting a pretty broad net and who we would make this document available to. We'll post it on our websites and invite comments from anybody.
But I think the first question we've asked for this hearing is, what is the maximum price and how was it arrived at, and whether that price shifts the playing field in some way. And I can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that question. Once you issue a NOFA, you've set the ground rules for a funding process. And that's not consulting with your stakeholders before you go out to the market. That's setting the ground rules for the game and then debriefing it. So while I don't want to get in the weeds on this, the questions that I asked were actually basic questions to understand how the methodology of how you got to that number and what its impact may be on funding certain kinds of housing. I do think it is a council decision if we are shifting our policy decisions around affordable housing. And if you change the guaranteed maximum price sufficiently, for example, you could create incentives away from nonprofit housing and towards for-profit housing, intentionally or otherwise, that I think is a council discussion. So I'm a little reluctant to have a NOFA issue before the council is better informed about what's actually in it.
If I can just add some clarification in terms of the NOFA itself. In terms of the policy direction, nothing is changing in regard to the green requirements, in regard to the MWSB requirements. The scoring process is the same as it was last year. The only additional component is that we added this threshold on the minimum cost per unit, or the maximum, I apologize, maximum cost per unit, and that threshold was informed based on, as Tracy said, the previous 12 projects that as we analyze and try to take into account just the living space and not the commercial space or other areas. And it was difficult for the staff because we had not broken down, we had not received that information broken down in that way, so we ended up making estimates. And so that's why we feel that it's easier for us to have a broader conversation that will take much longer period of time, but in order to make our funds available now, because we know there are projects that are ready to go, that we can start this process and then continue to have the discussions as we move forward.
So since we're having a public hearing now, could we maybe take public testimony and you could get us that number and come back and tell us what the...
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I can access it in my email now, but...
Oh, we can.
Oh, thanks,
we'll
Shannon.
It. Yeah, we'll get it.
Another piece of information, the Oregon Housing and Community Services is also using a maximum cost number in their CFC, I can't remember what it stands for, effectively their funding cycle this year, which comes out in a couple months, in a month?
In a few weeks.
Very soon.
Yes.
How does it compare with what you're proposing?
Very similar. I think there's some variation. I think both of us, because their projects are statewide, both of us sort of used our existing portfolio as a basis, trying to take into account as we could market conditions that are appropriate for the geography.
So, Tracy, it looks like we're going to break for a second, take some testimony, and bring you back. How does the scoring change based on having a maximum maximum price? How does the scoring for the NOFA change?
The scoring has not changed. The cost per unit maximum becomes a threshold. So if they don't come under that cost per unit, then it doesn't get evaluated unless there is a project that, as a whole, we feel that it's important to the city, it's important to the community, and then the Bureau has that discretion to move that project forward.
And you still have the same equity guidelines
Correct.
That we've been using? So what's been the response of Oregon on to the guaranteed maximum, to the maximum price that you're proposing for this NOFA?
The Oregon on, we have had many conversations with our partners at Oregon on through this two-year process.
Talking about just this, whatever number you're putting in this NOFA.
We have not shared specifically the number that we put in on the NOFA. We have talked about the need to have, or the discussions about the cost per unit maximums. And what we have been told throughout this whole process is that they just want to know what exactly where we are at, and we will work together to get things funded or to get the projects that we need into play.
Well, obviously their reaction is important, because if they say forget about it, then you've got no providers, right?
Well, that's
oversimplifying a little bit.
that would be true, yes. They're aware there was going to be a number. They didn't know what the number was going to be. Also aware that Oregon was going to have a number. I think that number came out a few weeks ago. I haven't personally received any feedback about it, but
let me be clear. I don't know what the number should be, and I have great confidence in your shop to come up with the right number. And I applaud Dan for wanting to have price be a factor. But it just seems like this is a pretty fundamental issue. And to hear that, first of all, we haven't been given the number, so we're going to correct that in a second, and we'll compare it to what we used to use. Dan has said that he's looked to Seattle for some guidance. I don't know whether
and
that's
Washington State.
And Washington State. I don't know whether that's a relevant comparison or not, but I think it's useful information. But my sense is that what we normally have done is we've talked to the development community and our advisory boards to get their feedback before we've cooked something in a NOFA. So I'm not that I am hidebound to excessive levels of participation on these things, but they are in fact the experts and could give us some feedback. And if their feedback is this is a non-starter, have we not taken the risk of a NOFA that becomes a failed NOFA and we have to start again?
Well, certainly the risk exists. I don't believe these numbers are at such a place that that's going to happen. Obviously our primary goal is to provide the housing. As Javier shared, we took pains to try to extract or to differentiate between the cost of building the unit as opposed to the cost of providing more supportive services, a better location. The land cost is not included. Things that would tend to focus on who we're serving versus what we're building. There's different prices based on bedroom size. We tend to try to incent people to build larger bedroom sizes, which is tricky sometimes in the market. So we've done what we can. I'm positive we were imperfect about it, but hopefully we'll learn from it as well. We're doing a lot of information gathering.
And the NOFA that's going out this week is for how much?
$17.5 million.
And this is CDBG, Home?
And TIF.
And TIF?
Correct.
Okay. So Dan's got the numbers here for us. And then other questions for Tracy or Javier, and then we might take testimony and then bring you back up.
Do we have a comparison for what, so this is a great chart, but do we have what the current maximum is?
There is not a current maximum.
Current maximum.
We have the...
These are very close to, I said, to what Seattle and Washington State have.
Do these reflect the 12-month, the 12 average over the last 12 projects?
12 new construction projects, which will be the more expensive per unit. If we had factored in the acquisition rehabs, the numbers would be too low for new construction.
You know, Tracy, my mind doesn't work that great with lots of numbers like this. What project that you funded in the last year would not get funded under these guidelines?
Stevens Creek wouldn't have gotten funded, and in fact is one of the reasons that we created the exception process. Stevens Creek is a massive redevelopment of a Home Forward project that's going to provide really great amenities in a neighborhood where we don't have a lot of affordable housing. We leveraged tens of millions of other funds in for our $2 million investment, but because the project was extraordinary in so many ways, there was lots of reasons where the per unit cost would have exceeded these numbers, and in fact is, as I said, the reason where why we put the exception process in, because we said that's a project we would have wanted to, we want to have the opportunity to fund.
And we were such a small piece of it and leveraged so much other money.
Exactly.
What's another project that might not have gotten funded at these levels?
I don't think
Bridge Meadows.
Bridge Meadows, another project that was extraordinarily leveraged, large site, multiple buildings, took a long time to put together because they leveraged so much private funding. Again, a project that we would have wanted to be able to participate in, but because they did so many really interesting and innovative things, we would have wanted to participate, and it wouldn't have met the criteria.
Would any of the preservation, would any of the 11 by 13 not have gotten funded based at these thresholds?
They're all acquisition rehab, so they should all be under. I don't think we even tested them against
those.
Because acquisition rehab is almost entirely less expensive than new construction.
And Tracy, could you remind us, does the location of the development have a big impact on the cost per unit? Is there a big difference between developing multifamily in Outer East per unit and, say, Hillsdale?
Certainly. So we took land cost out of the equation so that we weren't penalizing people for building in great neighborhoods.
And that's, by the way, that's an important point you just made, because some of the commentary I've seen seem to forget that the land costs were a big driver. And so cheaper housing in areas of distress, where land values was the driver versus the value system of this council, which is we build in opportunity areas, and that sometimes means a higher cost. So thank you, Mayor. I'd be interested in some testimony.
All right. Appreciate it. Any other questions?
Well, could you just read the numbers into the record for those watching at home?
Sure. So the maximum cost thresholds, subject to request for an exception with clearly delineated reasons, studio, $185,000, one bedroom, $250,000, two-bedroom, $285,000, three-bedroom, $300,000, four-bedroom, $310,000. It excludes the cost of land, commercial space, and community service space.
Clear. All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. So let's see who signed up to testify on this resolution.
Oh, we have three people signed up. Joe Walsh, Lightning, and Michelle Munt.
Come on up. Joe.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. In all of the discussion that you had here, I'm reminded of the auditor's report. And basically what she was saying, if I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I read it, that you spend $300 million and you get a 15% return, which is about what, $60,000. Is that accurate?
No. I don't think those are the right numbers, Joe.
Okay. Then would you tell me what the percentage of return is on your investment in low-income housing? Can you do that?
I assume it's negative because we're actually making grants in some cases. So
I'm not talking about the grants. I'm talking about the investments into the buildings and the apartments that you've been talking about, trying to figure out a reasonable number. And I'm saying the auditor's report on housing that just came out, it's not more than 2 weeks old, and she was criticizing housing for two reasons. One, they're getting a 15% return on the money that they're spending. That's 85% going out the window, about $300 million. Now, that may be justified, but it seems to me that that number, 85%, could be dropped down to 80% or 70%. 85, I mean, I read that and I said, Jesus Christ, what is that? That's spending money, not the grants. Forget about the grant for a moment. I'm talking about the loans that a nonprofit and the people that are building these low-income housing. They're not paying back the loans. You're getting a 15% payback on that. Is that not accurate there, Commissioner? Mayor, is that accurate?
We'll get the staff back up with more numbers, but, you know, you please raise them, so.
Is there any? I mean, there's a commissioner of housing here. Right, can you tell me what the numbers are?
We'll get the
percentage
staff.
Wise.
Joe, go ahead and finish your testimony. We'll get staff back up and respond.
Well, that's my concern. If those numbers are accurate coming out of the auditor's office, and I trust her, then there's something radically wrong with our whole system. And I'm getting a little tired of hearing staff come up here time after time and say, you know what, it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be great. It's never in the past. It's always in the future, and it's never in the present. In the present, you've got a lot of money, and you're screwing around with it, and I can't figure out why. Thank you.
Morning.
My name is Michelle Munt, and on regards to how housing money is spent in Portland and Oregon, I would corroborate Joe's direction toward more transparency, and thank you for having transparency. I learned a really lot today from Tracy Manning's way of describing what I was watching go on with tax increment financing in PDC as I was reading all the faxes there as a hired person, as it was privatized even then. I was a privatized staffer, so I've been watching a lot, and I'm glad I learned a lot today. I learned a lot how the different words are used. Yeah, and everyone's right on track. Thank you for the transparency.
Great, thank you.
More is coming to truth. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Morning.
Good morning. This is a important subject. If I go over a little bit, I hope you'll allow me to do that.
Try to be succinct, but you're...
Thank you.
Please
okay.
Proceed.
Again, I represent Think Lightning Company. My name is Lightning. On the issue of unit price, obviously you have a lot of different factors that go into play on square footage of units, quality of the units being built. But I noticed on the numbers given at the end that the numbers are within the right parameters off the audit, because you hit $189,000 per unit to $387,000. You're showing studios at about $185,000, so I think you're within the range. I think we all know that by looking at the micro apartment units or other developers, they're getting down to around $75,000 to $100,000 per unit. So your range for a good quality unit from a good developer is definitely within line. From my position, again, the Portland Housing Bureau loan program, of the total portfolio of $357 million in outstanding loans, Portland House Bureau estimates that only about $54 million, approximately 15%, will be repaid. This limits the opportunity for PHB to invest in new projects in the future. Since most loan funds, more than $300 million will be spent once rather than loaned and recovered and used again for additional future projects. In my opinion, the PHB loan program must be reformed. With the many non-performing loans, these can be no other, we can have no other choice currently Loans up to $2 million can be approved by the Portland Housing Bureau Director only. My recommendation for more oversight and transparency on any loan over $500,000, so Mr. Salzman, I think we're pretty close to being in agreement on that. Portland City Council members need to approve these loans. This is a top priority situation here. There needs to be more amortized loans implemented and possibly a few deferred payment loans, if needed at appropriate times. I recommend you discontinue cash flow loans and equity gap loans due to the simple fact they just don't get repaid. Repaying of Portland Housing Bureau loans must become the number one priority of the city. If ending chronic homelessness becomes a reality, a new culture of paying off loans must be established. Again, we can talk about the unit price all day long, but the bottom line is repay your loan if you're going to get a loan. The city does not have a never-ending supply of money. We can just call a loan a grant down the line. And do not call a loan to try to get some tax incentive down the line and then switch it to a grant. That is inappropriate to do. If you're going to pay a loan and call it a loan, that's what it is, and that's what needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lightning, while you're here, can I just...
Yes, if you could,
please. You're one of the most thoughtful people that comes before us on a regular basis, and I just want to point out one fact. You can agree or disagree with this,
yes.
But almost every issue that comes before us, you are the loudest and, I think, clearest and sometimes most thoughtful voice on the need to invest in housing for the poorest people in our community.
Yes.
You are also an effective voice for providing housing for formerly homeless individuals and families.
Yes.
And you have pointed out that we have a crisis in our community. We don't have enough units for people at the very low end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And I'm just going to share one fact with you. You can agree or disagree with what I'm about to tell you.
Sure.
The reason the bulk of our money is invested either as grants or loans that don't get paid back is because we are providing deep subsidies to housing for the very poorest people in our community. And as the auditor pointed out, there is a way to change our financing that looks more like a traditional bank. And that is to invest more in units that are more expensive and that have more of a market return. So I'll talk to you privately about this because it's complicated, but I appreciate your view about where the loan should go. But I just want to caution you that if we extrapolate that out, we won't be putting our limited resources in housing for the poorest in our community, which requires the deepest subsidy. We can put it in market rate housing and get it back. But then you'll be back here chastising us for not addressing the most needy in our community. And that housing does not pencil out unless we subsidize it. So just an observation.
If I can comment on that, please. A lot of your values on these apartment buildings are determined by the current rents or what the projected rent is or what you think you can get. I mean, let's face it, that's the way it's going to be determined off a cap rate and analyzing this. Now, the reality is on this is that when you're figuring out what these projects work and you're doing the numbers, you're already calculating that beforehand before you develop these. You're using certain numbers put into place. Now, I understand if a developer gets into a little bit of a problem. Where I have a problem is that if these loans are written off, I would say to the developer, why don't we go interest only now? Why don't we do a delayed payment plan? But do not expect us to call that a grant, and do not expect us to write that loan off, because we're going to take your building back before we end up doing that.
Fair enough. And just so you know, if we took that approach,
yes,
we would not have preserved 1,000 units of housing downtown of older, disabled people at risk of homelessness. We would not have added thousands of units in our 10-year plan to end homelessness. It's an approach which some in the business community have urged, but I just want you to know that if we take that approach, we would not be building housing for the poorest of the poor. You have identified a fundamental policy debate in the city, but I don't want you to think that just shifting to a loan only, as you suggest, with tighter restrictions, is going to get you what you have advocated so passionately and effectively for, which is housing for the poorest in our community. We'll carry this on privately.
It's a good debate
to
have.
It is the fundamental question, which, not surprisingly, you have raised, but I just want you to be aware that your position on the loans may be at odds with your values position to us about creating a supply of housing for the poorest. And I just want you to know there's a contradiction.
If I can give you a moment to respond to that, and then we'll close this portion of the debate. But it's a good debate, so I appreciate you.
My point is that if we have to bring in Intel to get them involved in these type of projects, they have the wherewithal and the money to carry these projects if needed. We don't need developers stepping up to the table or bringing Cedars-Sinai, bringing Jordan Snitzer, bringing Joe Weston, bringing people that have the wherewithal to understand that if we don't have that money in the future for these projects for the future, we're going to have more chronic homelessness in this city. And these are investments of the city's dollars that need to be paid back for future investments to keep chronically homeless people off the sidewalks. And that's the bottom line. There's plenty of money out there, big corporations who would love to step into these type of programs and have the wherewithal and need the tax write-offs, but they have the ability to understand, if I need to carry this a little bit farther, fine, I can do it. If I need to negotiate with the city for a delayed payment plan, I can do it. But I don't expect them to call it a grant in 2 years, and I don't expect them to write off the loan, because we need money in the future to get the homeless off the streets. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Are there others signed up on this?
That's all who signed up.
Sorry?
That's all who
That's
signed
it?
Up.
Okay. So further council discussion.
Your staff just
come back up for council discussion here. So more questions or follow-ups?
Just if I can just if I can clarify two or three things, Mayor, I'm ready to move forward with Commissioner Paulson's proposal. So Javier, just to recap, in this NOFA, you'll be putting these maximum cost thresholds, but they will be subject to exceptions that the director and the commissioner in charge can determine on a case-by-case basis, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All other elements of the NOFA around equity and all the other scoring remains the same?
Correct. There were some minor modifications from last year, but but in terms of, for example, in this equity scoring, it was 25 points last year, and it's 25 points this year. But it's pretty much, in essence, the same type of scoring.
Well, to simplify that, if there are any changes in the NOFA around scoring, would you send me an email just to walk me through them?
Certainly.
So I can understand that. And then the question I would have, Mayor, is I think actually sometimes experimentation in the marketplace is a good idea. And since Commissioner Saltzman has a sense of urgency about getting money out the door, and Lord knows there's a need, may I simply suggest that we get a report to Council at the conclusion of this NOFA with what you've learned through these thresholds, so that Council at that point could decide whether they would like to have a further discussion? Would that be acceptable, Commissioner in charge?
Yes, that's acceptable.
Good idea.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other
questions? Is there anything in the notice of funds available scoring for coming in at lower than these thresholds? These ceilings? Do you get bonus points if you're able to come in with a project that's doing studios at 80,000 rather than 185,000?
Not specifically regarding the thresholds, but in the scoring itself, there is, on the financing, there is a scoring component that's associated with it, efficiency. And so, from that perspective, but the cost per unit specifically is more of a threshold than getting bonus points and being able to come out a lower number.
Well, that.
But by efficiency, do you really mean cost benefit?
Cost benefit, correct.
So you would end up receiving if you submitted a proposal that was using city money efficiently and effectively to build the same a product of equal quality where we're getting the same outcomes, you're going to score higher in the financing because you're being effective, which would take into account a variety of costs, including those associated with cost per unit.
And how big of a score is that?
It's not to give you kind of a summary of the scoring itself, the finance, I believe, has a 15-point total score. Equity has a 25-point, and we have there's two other areas that I just skipped my mind, but altogether will make up 100 points. And so, as you can see, it being able to be lower than that threshold will give you some, but it's not something that will definitely push you over unless there are two projects that are kind of at the same level in the scoring, and that puts one over the other. And we will have, as we did last year, we had an internal review process, and we have an external review process in ANOFA as well.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the suggestion to have a report back and the willingness to do that. Thank you.
Other discussion? Okay, so let's take a roll call on the resolution.
Fish?
Well, this has been a fantastic discussion, and I especially want to do a shout-out to Lightning, who is here at every council meeting adding a very thoughtful perspective. And I think that we're not going to settle that question today, but it is a fundamental question about where we put our scarce resources. And I know other cities have things called forgivable loan programs. We have something called a forgivable loan, except we don't call it that. We call it a loan, and it converts to a grant, and it creates confusion in the public because it looks like we started down one path and another. The reason we use things like forgivable loans is that the kinds of housing we're financing wouldn't get built otherwise. There is no market for housing for people that have no income. And if you don't provide that kind of financing to mission-driven nonprofits, then you have more homelessness. So it's a wonderful thing to say that we ought to change all of our guidelines to have more money to invest. But it turns out, unless we put equity and grants into some of these projects, they don't get built. Now, there's a very simple way to change that. We could just say that we're no longer investing in low-income housing, which I have heard from some people in our community would be a good idea, in which case we can go up the income chain, invest in market-rate housing, and get our money back. But that is a policy choice. Let's not confuse that with good government or bad government, transparency or not. That's a fundamental policy choice that has to be decided by this council and would represent a departure from 25 years of history. But at some point, we'll have that discussion, and it will be thoughtful based on what I've heard today. Commissioner Saltzman, you have come forward with some guidelines which provide greater clarity about our rules, and they seem thoughtful to me. And having worked on portfolio optimization for a year or so, I'm so glad it's now in your portfolio. And I thank you for your good work. And Tracy and Javier, you know what I think of your work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank you, Commissioner Fish, for beginning this process to make the Housing Bureau's investment standards more consistent and transparent. So thank you for all your work in this effort. I want to especially thank the Portland Housing Bureau's underwriters, John Marshall, Sohoban Beto. Did I pronounce that right?
Siobhan Beto.
Siobhan Beto. Carl Dinkelspiel, Barbara Shaw, for the work they do on behalf of the city, and Javier Armenia, the newly appointed Assistant Director for the Housing Bureau, for helping to finalize these guidelines, and certainly to Tracy Manning for her leadership at the Bureau. And I think this has been a great discussion, but this is we are going to test drive this maximum cost standards and a lot of other things in this upcoming NOFA, but we're going to get this money on the streets, and we're going to start cranking out some affordable housing with this money, and we'll provide you with the feedback we get on our maximum cost thresholds as we move forward. So thank you. Aye.
Novick?
I want to thank the mayor for not giving me the Housing Bureau because because these matters are obviously far too complicated for a simple mind like mine to grasp. But I appreciate the energetic discussion among my colleagues, and I'm pleased that I voted after the president, former housing commissioner, so I have no compunctions about voting aye.
Fritz?
Ditto, aye.
Hales?
Well, this is a good discussion, and I appreciate, Dan, your leadership in carrying this idea to the next level, and Nick, to all that you've done on this front. I think we've got policy issues here to debate. We've got performance questions to ventilate, and then we've got a question of public understanding, which we have a big gap in, because these deals are hellishly complex, and for even those of us who've been around housing for a while, I'm also glad that one of them has this bureau, because having served on REACH's board and having been around the housing industry and having been involved in the public sector in a couple of different capacities, these housing projects are among the most complex financial transactions that the city does. And it's not our idea to make them complex. It's the nature of the industry in which we're trying to work in order to advance policy and get good performance. So we need to both really look at how we're doing, and that's the idea here. Are we getting cost effectiveness? Are we getting traction in our policy goals? And are we holding our partners accountable in appropriate ways? Of course we have to subsidize these projects, and I think Commissioner Fish, you highlighted that very well, that if these projects would happen in the marketplace without our help, we wouldn't be having this discussion at all. But, of course, they won't. So I think this is another area in city government where we can do better in terms of translation between how arcane and strange and niche this discussion is and the broader public understanding of what we're trying to do on a policy level, how much we're getting for our money, and what our partners are getting in return for their investment. Again, I think the auditor plays her role of examining performance, but I think it's really our job to try to keep working on how do we translate what we're doing into terms that busy people in other lives who don't have a housing background can understand. So I'm particularly interested in that aspect of this because I think that's in part my job for the whole enterprise, regardless of bureau assignment. But I think it's an area where it's a challenge here because it's so complex. So I appreciate this work. I look forward to hearing the report back about this particular NOFA and the airing of this proposal in front of your partners. I want to reinforce my earlier point that we need to talk to our critics and to our non-participants, as well as the folks that we're used to doing business with and anything that we do in the city, and this would be a good time to do that as well. Thank you. Aye.